Hello, everybody. My name is Joe Vargas, and you're listening to My Swift Journey podcast, my adventures of becoming an iOS developer. How's it going, everybody? It is Joe. It is Tuesday, September 7th, 3:04 in the morning. And I just decided just to jump on to the mic and start recording because I took a good 4 or 5 hour nap the day before or the evening before. It was around 4 p.m. and I had plans to watch a baseball game that started at 6:30. And I had woken up around 4:35 in the morning because a storm decided to roll through and cause a lot of lightning, which causes thunder, and that woke me up. I live on the top floor of my apartment, so I hear it more and I feel the thunder more. So I was awake since like 5 in the morning. I kind of ruined my plans because I was going to go get coffee and take my computer and just code. But because it was raining, I decided to make coffee at home. It wasn't the best coffee, but it was coffee. And I just started to code away. And the reason, and that's why I passed out at 4 p.m. Woke up at 10, and now I'm fully awake right now. But before that, I had about maybe 3 hours of streaming time. I was streaming on Twitch, and I'll make sure to repost that link on the podcast details. But yeah, I was streaming on there, and I was pretty much working on my running app with DevSlopes. I've gotten pretty far since the previous episode. The biggest milestone achievement was implementing a segment controller that can swap between showing distance in kilometers or in miles. Now, I've only implemented the segment controller in a settings view controller, and I was able to trigger just a basic print statement that says now displaying in kilometers or now displaying in miles. I have not gotten it to actually convert distance, the actual distance, the live distance, like when you're actually in a running session. I have not gotten that to swap over from miles and kilometers. That I was working on when I was live streaming, and let me tell you, it was a process. I was streaming for 3 hours, and I could not figure it out. Now in my head, I'm thinking I need to implement a protocol. Either one protocol that controls if the segment controller is on kilometers, display the distance in kilometers. And if the segment controller is in miles, display the distance in miles. Well, that's the kicker. That's the actual challenging part. I tried to implement a protocol every which way I could. I implemented not one, but two protocols. One to convert it to kilometers, one to convert it to miles. But I was like, they're doing the exact same thing. It's just a different conversion formula. There has to be a way where I can just implement it with one protocol. Well, I worked on it, but I was unsuccessful. And that is the most frustrating part of my day. And I did that for a good 3 hours, and I could not achieve it. Now, one thing is that, and every time I think about it, now I'm going to talk about it. But I remember doing this same thing to an app, to a weather app that I put together 3-4 years ago. Difference is that I was converting Celsius to Fahrenheit and vice versa using a segment controller. I remember doing this, and when I tried looking for the actual project in GitHub, I was unsuccessful. I'm thinking that I did not upload it to GitHub, where it can be safely stored for me to reference to today. And I feel like such a hypocrite for saying that. And I'll explain why in a minute. But that app, that project would have been so helpful today, because I'm pretty much doing the same thing, but only with distance this time. Now, from what I've seen and reading through the Apple documentation, and please stop me, send me a message, comment on a podcast in reference to podcast, but from what I remember 3-4 years ago, when I implemented that segmented controller, I had to actually type out the code that converts Celsius to Fahrenheit. See, because the API I was working with, I already had it as Celsius, which I was lucky, because there's an API that I've worked with that gives it in Kelvin. But the API I was working with, I already had it in Celsius. So I pretty much had to only write one formula to swap it or to convert it to Fahrenheit. But this time around, I noticed something differently. And I'm thinking, you know what? Swift is at it again. This is how quick Swift evolves. I noticed that Swift has a native library simply called Measurement. But under that library, under that API, is a class called Unit Conversion. Under that class are already functions that can convert any value into a unit under the sun. In my case, I'm working with kilometers and I'm working with miles. Rather than having to manually type out the formula to convert it to kilometers or miles, I can just implement that unit measurement, and it'll return the converted value. Now I'm working with that, trying to implement it with the segment controller, and I'm just trying just to get the segment controller to work globally across the app. Because even though I'm trying to convert the values in a live run session, I need for it to be able to know, hey, user has it configured in kilometers. So any data that we display, any distance that we display, it has to be in kilometers. If the segment controller is in miles, hey, we need to display the value in miles. And that is my current challenge right now. Again, I've already implemented the controller. I created an enum with cases of kilometer and miles, And I had the segment controller read from that class of unit of measurement that I have. But at this point, now that I've figured out that Swift has a whole library of measurements that I can work with. Well, first of all, I need to figure that out. I need to figure out how to implement it. But I've seen Apple's documentation on it, and that's going to be my first step to brush over. And then I got to implement it, which is awesome because it's on the UI Foundation framework. So that's going to make it very easy to implement it globally. So that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at right now. I've implemented the segment controller. Now I just need to make it like accessible globally. And the one thing that comes to mind when I think of a class triggering something that needs to be global, that's when the protocol option came into mind. And like I said, I messed with that for almost 3 hours and I was unsuccessful. Thankfully, I pretty much have the rest of the week in free time where I can continue focusing on it. So that's where I'm at with the Run app that I'm working on. I'm pretty much like just thrilled that I was able to implement the segment controller and being able to print whether miles or kilometers were chosen. So to me, that's a heck of a start. And I did that freehand too. I did that freehand. When I say freehand, that means that I did not need to like Google or, you know, look at projects that I've done in the past to get me an idea on how to implement it. The fact that I was able to, it was a little victory for me, basically. The fact that I was able to implement it, just, you know, almost like second nature. And that was the most thrilling part, that, okay, I updated the main storyboard, put the segment controller there, made the outlet, made the IB action. Now let's trigger some, you know, print statements. And and I created this unit conversion class, a custom unit conversion class with an enum in there with kilometers and miles as a case. And it was pretty thrilling that I was able to do that just off the top of my mind. Now, at one point I was like, hold on, this looks like something I can, you know, make it look cleaner. It just, there's little things, little mundane things that look very, very repetitive. And I'm all for that, you know, avoid the whole dry outcome. You know, do not repeat yourself. DRY, do not repeat yourself. So I did do a little YouTubing. I did, and one of my favorite people to look up, because, you know, he always writes really clean code. Was Sean Allen, and he had some tips on enums, and I was able to like clean up my code based on his advice. So big thank you to Sean Allen. He's always putting out great content on YouTube. Yeah, he loves iOS, and he, you know, he started off as a self-taught person. Graduated from a boot camp. He's not this episode's who you should follow, but just a, you know, a hat tip to Sean Allen out there. If you're not following him, find him on YouTube, find him on Twitter. He's on there. So I really did not have anything like, you know, any notes for this episode. I don't, to be honest, I don't even know what episode this is. Let's see. I posted one on April, on August 29th. What episode is this? Now I'm curious. This is terrible podcasting. I don't know. Okay, I'm thinking. Let's see. Well, episode. Okay, so this is episode 10. Cool. All right. Number 10. I really did not. Again, I usually have notes when before I podcast something. I just jot down. I remember something in my head, or I think of something in my head. And be, you know, I'm the type of person. I'm like a goldfish. If I don't write it down, I'm gonna forget like 30 seconds later. So I really did not have anything prepared, other than what I've just told you so far about my progress on this app. But I am lying. What I did want to do was discuss an article that I posted last week. A very personal article. Nothing sad or, you know, anything like that. But it's just something that I went through. It's just something that a lot of people are going through. Especially now, as mobile development, iOS development is gaining popularity. Like, there are a lot of people out there that were like me 6 years ago starting out. And they might not know where to go or how to start. And that's always like a very scary moment in time. Like, you know what you want to do. Like, you have a vision of what you want to do. I want to learn iOS development. I want to learn. But where do I start? Who do I talk to? You know, and that's a really iffy time. It's kind of scary. I was there before. And that's how I take it personal, that nobody was there at the time to show me a way on how to get started. You know, when you're in school and you want to learn how to play basketball, like, there's a coach there whose job is to coach and do, and, you know, be familiar with sports. And he or she is going to give you the best possible way. They might even be determined to, like, hey, you really want to learn how to play basketball? You know, I'll stay an extra hour, you know, after school, and we can meet Monday through Thursday. And I can give you some pointers and we can practice together. See, there's nothing like that right now when it comes to development. Whether if it's mobile development or web development, anything. It's pretty much, you know, you're going to take the route, the scary route of self-teaching yourself, or you're going to, like, go to school for it. And you got the pros and cons of both. Number one, pro of self-teaching yourself is that you don't have to physically go to a school and learn it. You can easily learn it online. The pro of going to a school is that you're going to get an actual structured roadmap on how to earn the knowledge of being an iOS developer. Now, the reason why many go the self-taught way is for a few good reasons. Reasons that I'm not going to probably mention, but they're mostly obvious. And I don't want to go into them because I'm probably just going to go down a rabbit hole. And that's just going to, like, stray me away from the article that I wrote. The article pretty much is based on the self-taught approach. But it has caveats. It has struggles, which, you know, I want to talk about right now. So I wrote an article last week, like I said, and submitted it on Medium, and I'll make sure to leave a link on it on the episode details. But it's pretty much 8 tips for self-taught iOS developer newcomers. It's my 8 tips I would have applied starting on my journey as a self-taught iOS developer that can help those who want to embark on their own self-taught journey. And it starts off by just giving a little bit about myself on how I started on my journey. And it was pretty much 6 years ago. I had got my first iPhone, and I was, you know, pretty thrilled about it. I was I was using a Samsung Android phone, and you know, it was cool. It was new. It looked very, very modern. Samsung really did a cool job on making it very sleek. But the Android experience was just not as sleek. I remember being excited about getting that Samsung phone. Android was like a cool OS. It was a competitor. It was very very rebellious against iOS. But it was just a nice modern looking phone, and Samsung hyped it, and you know, it fooled me. I got one, and yeah, I liked it. The experience was pretty cool. You know, it was a nice looking phone. But after a couple of weeks, I just saw how it would just slow down, it'd be buggy, it'd be lagging. And I just, you know, lived with it because I already had invested in it. I already had all my content on it. Like, you know, I already had my contacts on it. And like, you know, I'm just not going to just try and give away this phone or sell this phone or trade for another phone just because, you know, lagging out. You know, I don't want to go through all that again. But after a couple of years of having it, and then like Apple was coming out with a new iPhone, I was just like, you know what? I'm gonna get the new iPhone, which apparently was iPhone 6 at the time. So I got the iPhone 6, and I just immediately started enjoying it more so because my friends and coworkers already had an iPhone, so they were familiar with the ecosystem, the iPhone experience. And it was even helpful when like they would teach me like little tips and tricks on how to, you know, how to work things and whatnot. And it was just so cool that, you know, you can FaceTime on it just by a tap of a button. At the time, Samsung, you know, or Android didn't have anything native that could do such a thing. Unless you like downloaded Skype and you had somebody's email or Skype username, you know, now you have to ask for like extra credentials to be able to like, you know, video call somebody. And the fact that iPhone had that baked in, it was just like so cool. It was very easy to work with. So after a while of having an iPhone, I was like, wow. And especially just, you know, little games here and there, popular games at the time. One of my favorites, Angry Birds. I played Angry Birds just a bit, you know, anywhere and anytime I could on my free time. It was one of my favorite games, my favorite mobile games. And I was, at the time, I was like, you know what? It would be so cool, like, if, how are these apps put into this phone? Like, what possesses somebody to wake up in the morning and be like, you know, I'm gonna create an app where it's all about slingshotting this bird into a structure made of wood, and on this structure are these tiny little green looking pigs on it that when you knock them down, you earn points. That's a very simple concept. Slingshot something into a structure, and the more you knock it down, the more points you get. But this person, whoever created Angry Birds, you know, envisioned a bird knocking down a structure with little green pigs on it. You know, how do you come to that decision? It's going to be a red bird with a slingshot going to a wooden structure, knocking some pigs down. Like, how does one's mind come to that decision? And I just, at the time, went down a rabbit hole. And I was like, there has to be a process on how one comes to that decision. But I also wanted to learn the technical aspects of it. I just did not want to like learn the psychology of that. I just wanted to like learn the actual app development on it. And at the time, I already was like enrolled in these newsletters from like 905 Mac and The Verge, and this is when tech websites online were just becoming popular. Like, they were just growing because, you know, now you had Apple and Samsung, you know, going toe-to-toe with each other. You know, these online tech publications were just going wild. And they wanted to be the first to report on anything. You know, and that's at the time, The Verge had just come into fruition. I want to say like in 2014, 2015 or so. And, you know, they all wanted, you know, your email address, you know, to make money. And all you're going to get was like just, you know, some discounts on hardware and vouchers and whatnot. And that's when I got a voucher. Coincidentally, I got a voucher for Udemy. I had never heard of Udemy. Never, ever, 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 ever heard of Udemy. But here I am getting a $10 voucher from Udemy. But they marketed it well. It was not only just a random $10 voucher from Udemy. It was just Learn Swift, the language that powers iPhone. And I'm like, what? Swift. That's a weird name for a language. I've heard of HTML. This is when I was just like, you know, I wasn't familiar with the language. Lame. I knew HTML. I knew CSS. I didn't know about JavaScript. I did not. Just HTML. I knew C#. I never even at the time I was never familiar with Objective-C. But here we are. I got this email offering me a voucher, a $10 voucher for Udemy. And it was specifically for a course in Swift. And I was like, a language that powers iPhone. Huh, okay. You know, this is probably the language I need to learn to like build apps. And yeah, after a little Googling, and I went to Udemy, and sure enough, you know, the description of the course was like, yeah, you want to make apps? You want to learn how to make apps? Learn Swift. That's pretty much what it said. Oh, and the instructor name, Nick Walter. Shout out to Nick Walter. He was my first instructor who taught me Swift. I actually researched, I looked for the actual the course, because at the time of writing the article, I didn't bother looking into my Udemy profile to find out what was the name of that instructor. Nick Walter. And he taught, he was pretty fun, pretty funny guy. And he made learning Swift really fun. But yeah, I bought, it was a $20 course, but the it was $10 because of the voucher. So it's around spring of 2015, and I bought the course, and I started learning Swift, and I learned the fundamentals. I think it took 3 months for me to complete it. I had to pretty much rearrange my schedule. My, you know, any time off, I would dedicate some time to work on the course. And I enjoyed it. I really did. And to the point where after completing it, I was just like enthralled by it. I was just like motivated by it. And I just really wanted to learn more. And that's when I started, you know, searching for more sources, more resources, learning Swift. And the thing is, and here's the kicker. This is where it gets, where if you're coming into iOS development now, this is where you're lucky. Swift was, I think, Swift 2? It had just graduated to version 2. At the time, you would Google, you would search through YouTube. There was hardly any documentation, hardly any tutorials on Swift because it was such a young language at the time. Search for it now on Google. Search for it now on YouTube. Hundreds, if not thousands, of results come in. Because now it's Swift 5. There's a lot more tutorials for it now. Now that it's a little older. Now that's 5 years old. 6 years, going on six. But at the time, there was hardly anything when I tried Googling for more. Cool. It was just $10 I spent. But you know what? I at the time, I just didn't want to spend any more money on like learning Swift. I have no, you know, excuse or reasoning for me not to spend a little more on buying, and even if I had to pay full price of a $20 course. But at the time on Udemy, I did not find a lot of Swift courses on there. Mostly business courses or Microsoft courses that were on Udemy. But like I tried scouring Google for Swift courses, and you know, even YouTube, there was not a whole lot compared to how they are today. And that is pretty much how I got started in learning Swift and iOS development. And needless to say, after 6 years, I really enjoy it. I enjoy it today. And I know I enjoy the struggle. I enjoy the struggle of learning. Because I know when I do figure it out, that emotion, that victory, that's what it's worth. And it's just, you know, it's something very special, a very awesome accomplishment. When I thought about writing an article, what would I say? What would I recommend for newcomers, for new iOS developers who want to be like me 6 years ago, who took an interest, whether, you know, they like their iPhone and they want to learn how to make an app, or if like they joined a company and their company, you know, has an idea and they wish they had an app for it, and that, you know, you get inspired off of that. No matter your reasoning why you want to become an iOS developer, it's all gravy. It's all good. You know, it's a really good obstacle to pursue and accomplish. And when I thought about writing this article, I was like, me today. What would I tell me back in 2015? What words of encouragement or what tips would I give me 6 years ago? And slowly but surely, in 2 weeks' time, I had to come up with some very solid advice on how to pursue to become an iOS developer. At first, a week into it, I had 5 tips, and like the remaining 2 weeks, I came up with 3. So the first one is have a practical roadmap and stick to it. So when I started off, I think I started off okay. I purchased a course where it taught me the fundamentals. After that, I was trying to go from 0 to 60. I was trying to get ahead of myself. And that's not the way, you know, any programming language works. You really have to understand the fundamentals before you start, you know, building an app that's in your head and that you wanted to see come into fruition and post on the App Store. See, yeah, this is a terrible analogy, but you pretty much have to learn how to ride a bike to learn how to drive a vehicle. I know that's a terrible analogy because not a lot of people like grew up riding a bike as a kid, and you know, you just started to learn to drive as a young adult. But you just cannot skip over learning the fundamentals and just get right into the mud, to the blood, sweat, and tears of putting an app together. Because you're going to struggle a whole lot more if you do. If you do not know the difference between a variable and a constant, just that alone will be a struggle. Because if you got a function that relies on a variable, on the global variable, to constantly update in the life cycle, and you set it as a constant, and you get an error saying, hey, can't update that variable because it's, you know, can't mutate it. It's a constant. See, it's just little things like that. So, you have to put yourself, structure yourself to learn the fundamentals, learn the intermediate material, and advance to the advanced stuff. And one of the things is that there is free material that you need to know about that can help you learn in that structure. The fundamentals, the intermediate, and the advanced. No. It's not on YouTube. A lot of things on Google. You can probably find it on Google. But honestly, if you're going to learn a language from Apple, who better than Apple to teach you? And that's why in the article, I referenced a book on their bookstore called App Development with Swift. This resource, this book, it literally takes you on a joyride learning the fundamentals, learning the intermediate, learning the advanced, and it has practical apps, guided practical apps that you can put together. And it's really a great resource for you to follow. And they also have other books there that you can learn Swift. But the fact that now Apple has this book where you can learn Swift, honestly, when I went through this book, it's better. And this is like, I'm not trying to insult him or anything on the course, because he worked on this course. But if this app existed when I purchased that course from Nick Walter on Udemy, I would have chosen the book. I would have chosen the book because it was literally the same structure. The difference was, this is free. And who doesn't like free stuff? Second, this book is from Apple. Again, who better than Apple to teach you a language that they came up with? So, get yourself a practical roadmap and stick to it. And a practical roadmap, I mean, actually learn the language from the fundamentals, intermediate, to the advanced. Do not skip around. Do not go from fundamentals to advanced just because you're in a rush to put this app together. Because you're going to be more lost than ever. And what do I mean by stick to it? Well, stick to it. Learn it. Every day. Whatever online resource you're going to, whatever, if it's this book that I recommended, stick to it. Read it. every day. Do not skip a day. Now, when you do make a schedule and you stick to it every day, do not do what I did back then. I would literally wake up like early morning, before even the sun was out. I would sit at my desk, got my coffee, and I would code. I would learn for at least 8 hours minimum. Well, there were times I did 6 hours, because waking up early caught up to me a little bit. But the days where I was really energized, when I was really motivated, I would go from up to 8 hours, if not 10 hours. This is from waking up at 6 in the morning on my free days when I wasn't at my full-time job. And I honestly, that was wrong. I wish I knew somebody. And somebody would tell me, don't do that. Do not spend that much time. Because you're more than likely to burn out. And the thing is, on the second hour of study, when you're 8 hours or 10 hours deep, you really think you're going to memorize? You really going to think that you're going to remember what you learned? It's 1 p.m. And if you ask me, what'd you learn or what'd you read at 7 a.m., I'm going to be lost. I wouldn't remember. So, I advise you to at least commit to as little as 40 minutes a day, or as much as 2 hours a day. Whether you want to put those 40 minutes or 2 hours before you go to work, assuming that you have a full-time job, or you want to leave it after you come from work. People are different. People learn best, or people have more time in the morning. People are morning people. People are evening people. Depends. But do not put more than 2 hours a day. But at least put in 40 minutes. I look back today, and I do remember being a little burnt out, being a little flustered, just like being impatient because I really wanted to learn how to program, how to learn to be an iOS developer. And I look back and I'm like, ugh. And I still struggled. Even I put in as much as 10 hours a day, I still struggled to, you know, reference in my head what I learned to implement it in projects that I was working on that week or that day. And it was just very frustrating. And it put a lot of pressure on myself. I felt like I was in a race against time when there was like no race at all. And that's on me. And if I can, you know, reach out to somebody and like, who wants to do this, be an iOS developer, do not spend more than 2 hours a day, but at least put in 40 minutes. Put in 40 minutes, no more than 2 hours. Just so when you study, you actually retain what you learned.
Before I move on to number two, here's a quick word from our sponsor. Welcome back, everybody. Before the break, I talked about tip number two, and that was to have a practical roadmap and stick to it. So let's talk about number two.
Do not initially spend a dime on courses. And as I mentioned in the article, I know that's very hypocritical of me to say after just letting you know I just spent like $10 on a course. But the thing is, at the time, I didn't know anybody to tell me not to do that. I thought this course was like the only way for me to start learning. However, secondly, what did I say earlier? Swift was such a young language, there was hardly any online resources to look up. And today, there is an abundance of material out there. There are many resources out there right now I wish that there were when I started, because it would have saved me a lot of time and a lot of money. Not a lot of money, but it would have saved me money. At this point, from what I've seen when it comes to learning iOS development, there's a handful of online courses. Some are paid, some are free. And in the article, I reference a couple of free ones. Probably the most popular free online resource is a website called Hacking with Swift. And this was put together by Paul Hudson. He does not only teach you Swift and learning it in UIKit, but he also has an abundance of Swift UI. Like, you can spend a whole day on this website, and that's pretty much all you would need to learn Swift or Swift UI from A to Z. Now, he has this pretty cool little boot camp. I call it a boot camp because it pretty much expects you to show up every day and act every day. He has a challenge, a boot camp challenge called 100 Days of Swift or 100 Days of Swift UI. Each day for 100 days straight, he has these little mini courses, these little mini challenges that you want to go through. And also, there are some projects that you get to put together, some practical projects, just so you can solidify your knowledge. I highly recommend checking out Hacking with Swift because it is like it's just, there's no word, I can't even find the words right now to describe it, but it pretty much is, you know, it's going to be your number one. It'll be your homepage by the end of the day on your first day, honestly, if you're learning Swift. Check out hackingwithswift.com, and I highly encourage you to take the 100 Days of Swift challenge. The second course, or the second free resource that I want to point you to, is on YouTube. 5-6 years ago, this course would have been a gold mine, and I would have saved my $10 for something else. But it is a channel called iOS Academy. And they too teach you the fundamentals, the intermediate, the advanced, but they also have courses, tutorials where you can build clone apps like Spotify and what else? A chat app, like maybe WhatsApp. I mean, they just have tutorials where you can actually build apps, not only the UI but also the backend, the database part. And they use free resources like Firebase, and they have other apps that where you utilize free third-party dependencies. But honestly, if you do the Hacking with Swift 100 Days of Swift challenge, or you follow through with that website, and then go over to iOS Academy, because you're going to be many steps further when it comes to completing the apps that iOS Academy has online. Now, if you have the funds, if you have the money to invest in a course, there's only one course that comes to mind, and it comes back full circle to Udemy. You want to, and I'm saying, I'm not just recommending it, I'm telling you, if you have the funds, don't waste your time looking for courses. I recommend that you get Angela Yu's iOS and Swift, the Complete iOS App Development Bootcamp. And there's a reason why in the article I called it the Mount Kilimanjaro of online tutorials, because it is one fully packed course. You learn the fundamentals, and she just goes ham on the intermediate and the advanced stuff. You get the fundamentals, the intermediate, the advanced. She goes into AR, she goes into SpriteKit, Core, ML. She does Swift UI. She does Git versioning, which is very important as a developer that for you to pick up on. And she does app submission to the App Store tutorial. I mean, I'm telling you, this is your one-stop shop if you want to become an iOS developer. She goes through just a little, just about everything. Everything on that course. The course is $130, but I'm telling you, if this course is worth every penny, and if you're lucky enough to find it discounted, I recommend that you don't waste time and that you buy it. I promise you, you will not be disappointed.
Number three, document what you learned from the start of your journey. Whether if it's in a physical writing journal or in an online platform, jot down everything that you have learned and what you understand. It's no different than a child practicing tying their shoe over and over again, or a teenager driving and just trying to master learning how to drive just so they can like get their driver's license and be free in the world. It takes practice. And quite possibly the best way to document your practice and actually reading what you've learned is by documenting it, whether again on a physical, you know, spiral notebook or one of those fancy $1,000 journals with a leather cover on it. But honestly, the way to go personally for me, and I highly recommend you go this route, is to document it on an online blog. I started documenting what I've learned on Medium about a year ago. And for the most part, well, no, entirely. Everyone, you know, anybody who sees it, who has the time to comment, give me professional or, you know, constructive criticism and feedback. No one was ever rude or like, you know, tore me up to shreds just because I learned or I implemented something a different way than they did or they learned or with what they think is a standard. You know, the internet is a scary place. People have their own opinions, but you know, everyone who has document or everyone who has commented on my online articles have been very nice. So I've recently did an article on how to create an API endpoint on Google Firestore. I had never done. I didn't even think I would ever had to do something such as that. But I do have a capstone project in mind for my DevSlopes Academy. And it's going to take having to connect and update an API endpoint. And I knew it was something. If I not it, when I came up with the
idea in my head. I was like, you know what? I know I'm going to have to do it. I do not know how to do it. But after reading some material, after watching some YouTube videos, I did it on my own and I documented the whole process of creating an API endpoint on Medium. Now, there are a lot of advantages that come from documenting your work online. First, it's a great way to store references that you can easily look back on. Second, you get feedback on it. People see it. People chime in on what they recommend or any tips that they would offer you, which is awesome. But I think the most valuable profit of it is that you have something to link to when you build a portfolio. And in your portfolio, the obvious thing is having listed projects, companies that you work for, clients and all that. But let's say if you do not have a sufficient amount of projects or clients that you work with, at least you have a blog or an online reference that clients, potential clients, can click on and see and read your work. Now, what does this mean? Well, it shows that, you know, you have a skill, that you know how to do something. Second, it shows that you know how to document it. And in theory, say if they hire you, you put a feature together, or you build a whole application for them. The fact that you're able to build an application or build a feature and document it goes a long way. Now, there's a bit of a bonus on documenting what you've learned online, but I'll get to that in a tip later on. Number four, do not delete apps you find mundane or think will not have value later on. And I say this because over the years of building my skill set, I would create different types of apps, whether if it was like a weather app or like a to-do app or something, just, you know, little small projects like that. But as you start building these classes and structures and just the functionality of it, you're going to want to keep those and reference to later as you make more complex apps. So the one that comes to mind, about maybe in 2018, I built this this app where, and it was a guided tutorial. It was this app where you had to import a CSV file that contained about 22,000 countries and major cities. And that was the first I've ever heard of actually importing a CSV file like that and parsing the data from it. When you search for a city, I thought that was pretty cool, and it kind of saved you the time of building functionality of using whether Google's API or Apple's API of geolocation searches of city or reverse geolocation. And basically, you had 22,000 major cities and countries that when you there's a view controller with a search bar, and it would parse out all the cities and countries from this file. And it took you step by step on how to build the functionality of, you know, having Swift read the data from this CSV file. And I thought that was pretty cool. Later on, I was like, you know what? No, I'm pretty sure this is not how major apps work, where it imports a CSV files, where it imports a CSV file to read countries and cities. I'm sure they use an API of sorts, whether Apple's, Google's, or some other third party. So, but I still kept it. I still kept it because this one was different. It was getting data from a CSV file that you tossed into the project. Well, fast forward 3 years later, I applied to this role based in New York, and they sent me a take-home project to work on. And what did that have? Well, you basically had to download a CSV file that contained high schools from a school district there in New York City. Not only that, but it also had test scores, SAT test scores. It had reading, it had writing, it had math. It also had how many test takers took the test for a certain year. I think it was like year 2019 or 2020. You basically, the instructions were you had to parse out the CSV file and display the data that came inside. Well, guess what? This totally reminded me of that app, the weather app. And thankfully, I saved it in my GitHub. I didn't throw it away. I swear, if it wasn't for that project to reference to, it would have taken me a little longer to complete that app, to complete the take-home project. I think it took about 40, 45 minutes to complete the scope of work. Basically, list the schools in a table view, tap on a school, and segue over to another view where it shows the amount of test takers and the scores of each subject, reading, writing, and math. It took me a good 40, 45 minutes, and I swear if I didn't have that app that I saved long ago to reference to, it would have taken me a lot longer, maybe a couple hours, just to do some research on finding out how to do it. And again, it saved me a whole lot of time, and that's why I can't stress it enough. Do not toss out, do not trash any projects that you think are not going to be of value. Whether if it's a small app where, you know, you just segue view to view, you segue with data, you toss data over to a whole new view controller, or if it's just a playground that you're just messing with code. And at the time you found cool and it was had value, you learned something from it, don't toss it. Don't throw it away. I swear you're going to thank yourself for not tossing out any apps. Number 5, join an iOS community online. I hate to sound biased, but I think the iOS development community online is like probably one of the best, most supportive, most inspirational that I've ever been involved in. Everyone just seems to be just helping each other out, uplifting people, congratulating when somebody gets their first job as a developer, or when there's a huge party online when somebody finally finished their app and it gets submitted into the App Store and accepted, and it goes live in the App Store. Personally, the two platforms that I use are Twitter and Instagram. Now, Twitter is pretty cool because it can be easily send a message out to the community. You can post messages, questions, short videos, and as you follow more people, especially iOS developers, Twitter's algorithm, it really does a fair, if not good, job finding related people, iOS developers, based on the people you follow And it's a quick way to actually build a community, build a following, and find people with the same goal of either aspiring to be an iOS developer, or some may already have years of experience, or who knows, maybe, you know, you can find a job through that too. I've seen it happen where, you know, people just, you know, post to become good friends, and it just takes off from there. People, if they see that you have a really strong interest in it and you really give it 100%, it wouldn't be a surprise that that you can land a job. I've seen it happen. It's inspirational to see that too, because it really gives me hope that, you know, someday, you know, somebody might find my profile and give me a shot. So yeah, and also you want to make sure that you're constantly engaged, as you know, much as once per day. And I say this, and I'm sure you can do it, because what did I say earlier? Commit to the roadmap, work on it, 40 minutes minimum, 2 hours maximum. What you can do after you study for your allotted time, post a message on Twitter saying, look, this is what I learned today. But, you know, you may also have questions. You may also be confused about what you learn, and you need maybe some clarification. Post a message saying, look, this is what I'm studying, or this is what I studied today, but I'm a little confused with so-and-so, and I'm just wondering if anybody has time to give me feedback. You know, and more than likely, someone's bound to reply to your post. Also, if you're documenting online, say if you wrote, you know, an article about closures and you posted it on Medium, share that on Twitter saying, look, I just posted this article on Medium about closures, and ask for feedback. You know, if anybody has feedback or any tips on closures, something that, you know, you didn't mention in the article, you know, ask people to feel free to head over to the article and leave a comment. And if they truly find value in it, and they know people that follow them or they follow will find value in it too, they'll be bound to share your article, retweet your tweet, so many others can see it. And guess what? That's how you get exposure. You know, having one person do that is cool, but can you imagine if like 2, 3, 10 people retweet your post and you get like 10 times the exposure? You got people who are followed by thousands of others, and that's how you will gain exposure that quick overnight, and you'll be having some new followers, not only on your social media, but on your Medium profile, if you know you decide to sign up with Medium and post there, or if you have a personal blog, wherever you post. The fact that people are going to gain exposure to your online articles, it's awesome, because again, now you're going to have more people following you, and you get to follow them, and you get to collaborate, network, and it's just a snowball effect into nothing but greatness from there. Now, if I didn't mention it, I think Twitter is my favorite platform, because again, it's quick and easy. You just write some text, some call to action or something, or an announcement, post a quick link, and send it off. But Instagram is also a great platform, and I'll tell you why. Instagram it just plays better with video content. You're able to make, you're able to go live, you're able to make reels, post with videos. Instagram was built on photo and video in mind, and having it work seamless on there. And now, you know, what can you post? What kind of photos or videos can you post? Well, take screenshots of your projects you're working on. Take a video, whether you have some sort of video capturing, like a desktop capturing app where it records your video. Now, I recommend the like probably cheapest route of recording video on your desktop would be to use QuickTime. But also another resource is called Loom, Loom.com. You can sign up for a free account and you can download a desktop app where it captures not only your desktop, but also your webcam. It captures your audio from your mic and also your desktop audio. It's a great way to just take a 30 second video of you just going through a project you're working on. You can like showcase the app so far on the simulator, and you know, you can actually download it. Also, when you finish recording that video, it'll automatically upload to your profile online where you can download that video and actually upload it to Instagram. Easy. And it's just a great way to showcase your work so far. Now, when say if you, let's say, you worked on this to-do app where you're able to write a quick note, hit save, you know, does its thing of uploading to Firebase, brings it down, you're able to display the note, edit the note over and over. Take a 30-second clip of that, post it on Instagram. Grab the link of that post from Instagram, go to Twitter, copy the link on a post message, and you know, post from there saying, "I just completed my to-do app. Let me know what you know you all think, or give any tips, any feedback that you think I should include." Make changes to, you know, just be open like that. Be open to feedback. Because I promise you, again, the iOS community online is very helpful, very engaging, and they're very, very positive bunch out there. Now, you're probably wondering, like, well, Joe, I just created this Twitter account. I just created this Instagram account. Who do I follow? How do I find these people that you talk about? Well, you can find me, yours truly, on Twitter and Instagram. I'll make sure to leave links in the podcast episode description. But also, once you find me and start following me, look through the people that follow me or who I follow. There are dozens and dozens of aspiring iOS developers, as well as professional, even, you know, as even self-taught ones as well, just like me. Now, if you don't have time to go through all those accounts and start following, at least follow one and follow this particular one. It's called iOS Developer Happy Hour. Okay. Now, once you find them and you follow them, make sure you hit that little bell. When each time they post, you'll get an alert. Now, why? Well, for about a year now, the host, who goes by Alan W., he has a Zoom get-together once a month. He's been doing this since last year, around the summertime, where as much as 140 aspiring freelance professional iOS developers get together with a beer or spirit of their choice, and they just vibe iOS development, and it can go on for as long as an hour and a half, 2 hours. And I swear, there's 2 hours is not enough. I mean, they can, you know, really go longer than that. But 2 hours is pretty fair, only because the majority of the time when the session starts, it starts at about 1 p.m. Central Time. And let me tell you, that can be like 3-4 in the morning on the other side of the world. So they try to host it at times where it's reasonable for anyone, wherever you are, to join. And it's really a fun session. It pretty much starts off with everyone in the same huddle, but then they break off to smaller groups, and that would be your time to shine. That's when you break into groups of like 5, 6, much as 10 people, and they go around the table, introduce yourself, and yeah, that's how you network with people, and that's how you find other self-taught aspiring developers that you might not know the Twitter handle of. And if you really hit it off with somebody, ask them, you know, are you on Twitter? Are you on Instagram? I'd really like to follow your journey as well. And, you know, share your journey as well. So again, great community of developers out there. And I couldn't be more happier to be with this, this type of community. Moving on to my sixth tip. And this may be a little intimidating for some, especially if you're just starting out. You're just days, weeks, or a couple of months into starting your journey. But it's a crucial one. And my sixth tip is start building apps on your own. On your own. Again, it can be a little intimidating because you're just starting out. You barely know the fundamentals. You're barely getting into the intermediate, and you're just a little too far off from the advanced stuff to maybe start feeling comfortable to write code and build your own apps. But let's recap for a second. If you followed steps 1 through 5, you've already chosen a practical roadmap to follow. You've completed Apple's own guided courses, where it gives you a thorough explanation of how Swift works. You've completed Paul Hudson's 100 Days of Swift or Swift UI challenges, and you came out victorious and confident building small-scale apps. You've gone through iOS Academy's playlist on YouTube, where you have an Instagram and Spotify clone project in addition to a basic chat app in your portfolio, all of which touch base on the intermediate to advanced use of Swift libraries, classes, plus network and database functions that use third-party dependencies. You've reached what I like to call the summit of Mount Kilimanjaro of tutorials, Angela Yu's iOS Development Bootcamp, and I hope you printed out and framed your completion certificate so you can hang or place next to your workstation, just so you can remember how far you've come. And you've built an online following, documenting your progress and finding fellow aspiring and professional iOS developers on social media who you can collaborate with and pick their brains. Based on these achievements, you should be well-versed in Swift, as well as Swift UI, to start creating an app on your own. Whether it's a quiz app or you just want to go toe-to-toe with Microsoft and build a to-do competitor, you have the tools and the knowledge up to this point to accomplish either. And I'm sure as you were completing tutorials, you may have had an app in your mind that you want to put together someday, but you just didn't know how, or, you know, put the pieces together to start building that app. Well, like, I'm pretty sure as you were going through these tutorials that you were having these aha moments, you know, on how to code features of the app that you have in mind. The reason why I encourage you to start creating apps on your own at this point is so you don't get trapped in tutorial purgatory. Tutorial purgatory is basically you consistently watching and going through tutorials because you feel safe, just because somebody's hand-holding you and guiding you building an app. Let me tell you, tutorial purgatory haunted me for about a year. And I know, I understand that it's kind of hard to pull yourself out of that phase, but you need to, because that is the only way that you actually learn and you actually implement what you have learned. learned so far. Based on, you know, these tips, and if you follow them through as they are listed, you should be ready enough to start building your own app. And it's time for you to get out. Don't listen to that voice in your head that says, no, you're not ready. No, you're not ready. Because at this point, you are. And I wish somebody would have told me sooner to don't listen to that voice in my head, because I spent a year in tutorial purgatory. I was just doing and working on any tutorial I can find on YouTube, or just Googling, or any documentation I can find. And I just didn't feel comfortable starting my own app. Now, what if you don't have an app that you have in mind right now, when you know you have that thing, you think you have that thing to work on? Well, you want to ask yourself, what are you interested in? You know, some people like sports, some people like cars, you know. I like weather. I'm a big weather buff, and I just like learning about weather. And I've been interested in weather since like 8th grade, when I was like 12, 13 years old. So that's why I really enjoyed the tutorials, the courses where it took me through connecting to an API endpoint like OpenWeatherMap and downloading weather data and displaying it on the UI. I remember the first app I did on my own was a very, very basic weather app. All it did was display the city name, the temperature, and an icon that reflected the weather condition at that moment. But the thing is, I feel proud because I took what I learned from courses that I went through, particularly the ones where you do the networking calls and you update the UI with the weather, or with the data you get from the API. I, even though it was just so simple, three elements on the screen, the fact that I did it on my own, piece by piece, the code was, I mean, the structuring of the code, I mean, it was, you know, not clean, you know, and eventually taking the time, I can clean it up. But the fact that I completed the end goal, and that's to display weather of the city based on the GPS coordinates. So if you don't have an app that you can think of to work on your own, find something that you're interested in. Like I said, some people like cars, some people like sports. You know, I recommend, I've seen a user online who is a big fantasy football fan, and he used ESPN's API to make like a cheat sheet of players and rank them by their fantasy points from last year. Now, some websites like ESPN, they already give you like a spreadsheet that has these players listed by the amount of fantasy points earned last year. But you know, that's, you know, in a spreadsheet. You know, what this user did, he made it into an app rather than, you know, having to copy the spreadsheet and, you know, having to have, you know, Microsoft Excel or Numbers installed in his phone to be able to open up that spreadsheet. He just made an app, and it listed the players, and he was able to have like a tab bar, like a segment control bar at the top, and it had, you know, the quarterback, wide receivers, running back, and you tap on each one and it'll just show in the table view the players listed, and the one with the most, you know, it was just listed in order from the most fantasy points of last year to the least. So I thought that was a very interesting project that he came up with. And, you know, when he can use it next year when they update the API data, He'll be able to update the network, the actual API URL, and next year in 2022, you can view data from 2021 of this year. So just things like that. If you like cars, find an endpoint, an API endpoint online where it, you know, gives you data on cars and build an app, you know, and make like a segment controller where it shows cars, you know, based on like four door, two door, sedan, trucks, van, just, you know, something simple like that. And list the car in a table view and tap on the car and segue over to another view where it gives you details of that vehicle. So, you know, just things like that, you know, simple things like that, that can take you, you know, at least a week to complete. Do a lot of projects like that, that use networking calls, because from what I've seen, a lot of companies out there, you know, they have apps that actually do network calling. So, I mean, who knows, if you want to build an app, a sports app, or a news app, that, you know, there are a lot of APIs out there that have a news API. We can grab news data and just display it on the project. Build little apps like that. Build maybe 3-4 just so you can get used to that type of app and those types of functionality, because again, a lot of apps out there, the majority of them, they have to talk to a server somewhere, they have to do networking calls. And for you to build apps, small little apps that do some networking calls, that builds up a skill set. And, you know, down the road when you apply for a job, and, you know, you're at least confident enough to, like, you can do networking calls, parse the data, and display the data, you'll be solid on that subject. So bottom line, build apps on your own and do not listen to that voice in your head that's telling you that you're not ready. Moving on to tip number 7, and that's find a mentor. Finding a mentor will probably be the most challenging task to take on. Is it a must? Not really. I made it through my journey 5 years with no mentor, and I did fine. Do I regret not finding a mentor earlier? Sort of. I do believe if I found a mentor early on, I would have gotten a more in-depth review of what the industry is really like and what is expected of an iOS developer. With this knowledge, I probably would have revised my self-taught strategy. As I mentioned, that it will be a challenge to take on, because unless you personally know someone in the industry, it will be a timely process to find someone you trust, and said person will be willing to take you under their wing. So let's say you do not know someone in the industry to ask for mentorship. Well, you could use your following on Twitter and Instagram to find some potential candidates to ask. Now, keep in mind, just don't start following every single seasoned person or professional iOS developer. Follow them for a week and ask them for mentorship. There is a certain etiquette you got to follow. First, you want to make sure you have posted and shared plenty of quality content that showcases your work and potential. You want your content to reflect that you have merit and are genuinely interested in iOS development. This is where tip number 3 comes into play, and your post will do the heavy lifting for you. All the content you share would be just like a resume for you. If you have been posting articles to online blogging platforms, you want to make sure you have a link to those platforms on your social media profile. If you post to multiple platforms or have multiple development-related profiles online where you post your work, I suggest registering with Linktree. Add your platform profile links, then add your Linktree URL to your social media profile. Second, you want to make sure you engage in posts from those who you follow that are a likely candidate for being a mentor. Whether they post code snippets article links or even funny programming memes, make sure you actively and genuinely reply with a relevant response. For example, if someone posts an article about closers, read the article thoroughly and then respond thanking them for sharing their post and ask questions if you have any, or let them know that you are starting on your iOS development journey and their article helped you understand how closers work. This is just an example, but make sure you put your own personal thought into your responses. Maintain an active presence online for at least a couple of months. Then generate a call to action type of post asking if anyone would like to be your part-time mentor. I say part-time because, let's face it, everyone has lives outside of work, so not everyone will be fully invested in being a mentor. You may also want to write an article about your journey and what you have learned and accomplished up to this point. Make sure you share a link to your article in your call to action post. Additionally, ask to kindly like and share your post so your outreach can go a bit further. My eighth and final tip is join a bootcamp. Seeking and joining a quality iOS development bootcamp is a big step. You should treat the process as if you're purchasing a new car. There are a few reasons why you want to join a bootcamp. A bootcamp offers a structured curriculum, an online community of fellow students and instructors, and offer resume building and career placement opportunities. It is a bit of a monetary and timely investment with a price tag as low as $2,500 or as much as $17,000. Some boot camps can be as long as 14 to 20 weeks, but compared to a bachelor's degree, it's quite possibly the most economical alternative option. Plus, it takes significantly less time to complete. I personally joined DevSloats Academy, who are not affiliated with this podcast. I joined in October of 2020. I chose it because their curriculum was very appealing and they touch on all the ins and outs of Swift. They're also fully online, which makes it convenient to study anywhere with an internet connection versus having to be in a classroom 8 hours a day, like most boot camps require. The cherry on top is that it's self-paced, which is ideal with my full-time job. I knew the type of teaching style and material I was getting into because I was familiar with DevSloats years prior when they would post courses on Udemy. I am currently halfway through the 16-week curriculum, and it's been a great ride so far. My 6 years of practical experience has made this program a breeze to get through, and I feel blessed for that. So please, if you do want to join a boot camp, take your time. Find one that best fits your lifestyle and your budget. I really do hope that you find these tips helpful, and if you do, or if you know somebody that will, please, please, please share the related article with them or share this podcast with them too. I'd greatly appreciate it. And if you have any questions and if you have any comments, all my links to my social media will be on the podcast details, and feel free to reach out to me. I would love to hear from you all. So like I said in the beginning, I really did not plan on recording a podcast episode this week. It was just random. And I really want to share this article with you guys. I really want you to get these tips as soon as possible. So I had no episode notes. I just did it all randomly. And I think it went successful. I'm usually the type that plans. I write notes just so I can have a little bit of a structure. So with me not having any notes, I pretty much did not have a who you should follow feature until I talked about the iOS develop happy hour, iOS dev happy hour that hold those monthly Zoom meetings. And when I started talking about that, I remembered one person, because She's a significant feature or a significant person to the iOS Dev Happy Hour. And her name is Ting Becker. She goes by Tikachu1 on Twitter. She's a big Pokemon fan. Ting is a self-taught iOS engineer. She used to be a CPA and auditor. But now she spends some time being a host on iOS Dev Happy Hour. So find her on Twitter. I'll make sure to leave her profile, Twitter profile link on the episode description. Find Ting on Twitter. And in her profile, it has the iOS Dev Happy Hour Twitter account. So that's a quick way to get to that account and follow them. And again, make sure you click on the bell. So like when they start posting and you know they come up with a date and a time to host these Zoom meetings, I highly encourage you to register and join the meeting because you'll get to meet a lot of friends, a lot of self-taught iOS developers, those who are on the same journey as you. And trust me, you'll get a lot of inspiration and a lot of value to the point where you'll wish those Zoom meetings were every weekend. But unfortunately, you know, many people are busy. And I think once a month is sufficient. But who knows? Maybe down the line, they'll host two sessions per month. But for now, it's just one session a month. Again, I really hope this episode brought some value to you or to anybody that you think might find value in it. Again, please share it. And if you have any questions, comments, please reach out to me. I highly encourage you. I would love to hear from you guys. So that'll be all for today. Until next time, be a good person. Be a better neighbor. Happy coding. Hi, everyone, and thank you for listening to this episode. If this episode brings you any value, do leave a review, and if you have time, a comment. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and will help me produce future episodes. If you'd like to leave me a voice message, which I would greatly look forward to, head over to anchor.fm/myswiftjourney, click on the message button, and record away. I look forward to your messages. Happy coding.